I like to sit on this, Mabel. We don't have one the whole house.
No.
That would think
you
I'll just...
know, I often not tell that, but on the poor devil, but his mother's been dead 2 weeks, Neil Preston up in Micanopy. And I've never seen him but two or three times. And he married Betty Sharice. Betty Sharice, we've been knowing her before she ever married the first time. She'd come out here, Dr. Davis, girls, they'd come out there and sit on that porch half a day at a time, you know, and they'd be giving somebody the devil, you know, somebody. In other words, mom and daddy had to let them do just what they wanted to, go where they wanted to, and of course they'd come out here, you know, and talk. But anyway, Bill's mother had been dead about 2 weeks. And he came by here and he was just as drunk as a coot. I'm on. Tell you, you sit out on that thing, you're a boner, don't have no more now. You're going to just have to be my mom. He just, and he'd pat me. And he just sat down, and he was so drunk, you know, this thing, and the record just turned right over backwards. His feet up nice. And so Irene came in just ahead of him, and Phil was up yonder mowing. And Irene told Bushy to go get Papa. And he tried his best to stop that mower. Phil was mowing the yard, and he tried his best to stop it. And Phil said, well, he thought to say, well, I better stop and go see what's the matter. Says he's never acted like this before. And he looked up and saw Irene started up the ashes. When Irene come, he left, but he hadn't been back. I told Betty about it, his wife. I said, don't you tell Bill nothing about it. I said, because he'd be embarrassed over it. But I was sorry for him. I said, I wasn't a fool with that old cuss. No such way as that. I said, well, I couldn't hurt his feelings.
That's what an
arm
was good for, though, whether you're drunk
or not. But he did. Whatever he got away with him, though. I mean, he just turned over backwards right off of it. He got take it, got up off of it. Back to death to the wall, he says, I got the dead wood on now.
What is that expression, dead wood?
I don't know. I have never looked that up, but I do know what hitting on wood means.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that since.
Yeah.
You know, you get the encyclopedia and hunt all those things down,
old man
you're quit doing
it. Come from
that's color on the gut of the wood.
India has 30,000. You went and sit down on a stump and told him, said, all right, now I said, I got the dead wood on.
Dead wood.
No,
dead
I
wood.
Never had.
And this mistletoe, that's a pagan custom. And I told Phil the other day.
I've heard that expression, I've got the dead wood on you, or somebody got the dead wood on them and they didn't have much choice. I just never heard that.
Yeah, I don't know what I mean, but I was reading one day about the mistletoe, where it started and how it got started, and all like that. And as I share last week, not this past week, week before last, I started this week ago when it was. We got a lot of this mistletoe out of the trees around to decorate the church up there. Fell out of the pagan religion. I grew messed up with Christian religion, decorating the churches with it.
How'd they get that stuff out? Shoot it out?
Yes, they shot some of it out.
And then they got a ladder and got some of it out.
You know, that stuff don't look like it's far up there, but when you start getting out on a limb, it gets further and further.
Oh, my. Betsy's got some that's got the most berries on it.
We used to have a tree right out there, and we had the mistletoe cut out it the third time, and the third time it killed the pecan tree. There was huge pecan trees, and we get enough off of that nut tree every year to well pay the taxes on the place.
Oh.
Really?
Around $60 to $75 worth a year. Mm-hmm. But the last time they cut too much of it out and killed the tree, but they were really nice nuts. But that stuff you have to cut out before you know it, it's those trees right there have been cut back I don't know how many times.
Oh, really?
And that mistletoe gets the mud again.
Well,
pecans is nothing this year.
I haven't bought any. Are they high?
Yeah, how they, you know, the packages we used to get for 99 cents, $1.69, I think, now.
Oh, really?
My sister up in Auburn, Georgia, she's got a bunch of trees, and she takes this regular potash.
Yeah.
You buy in cans, and she sticks it full of holes and berries around those trees.
Oh.
And she just has a world enough every year.
Uh-huh.
And she said that she wasn't coming to Florida or dog leaves, no, because she wasn't coming this Christmas, too many nuts on the ground. And it'll be picked up. So she done sold $275 worth.
Well, that's one advantage we used to have when we'd go up the country, you know, Christmas or something, Christmas. You know, coming back or going up either, we could just sort of load up a little bit.
Our mayor, our
get them right fresh.
Granddaughter gave Phil a nutcracker last year. All you have to do is pull a handle. Have you ever seen one of those?
No.
Well, it's a nice thing that's on a board and, you know, about that long. You put the nut up there and just pull the handle back and it cracks it. I mean, you stick it out over.
Please leave.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
We just sitting there and just wait that time.
Where,
just kill it all the evening.
If it's anything we do have, now is time.
Well, I know. But you will have a little more time when you don't have all this responsibility around here, Phil. I don't believe you realize how much time you will have. You see, when you sold that place, you still didn't get out from under it,
no. No, sir. Sure wasn't.
You just
feel a little good now.
I do. I think those are nice people up there. It seems like they're good people, neighborly.
Well, them people that lived up there, I think a lot of them people. I do. I think a lot of them.
I was sorry for them here. I raised them about a month.
They were kind of funny people.
Yeah, well, cute, you, but we like them.
They maybe wouldn't like me or you or somebody, but that doesn't make any difference. I still like
them. You know, I don't
know. They think a lot of us, too.
I don't know what I'm going to do with that family business. That this Miss Morris got bad off sick. And her husband wasn't there. You know, Diane lives on where the road goes to Citrus. And then that second house on the right where you turn the road goes to Citrus. And she got this teacher she'd been riding with, her husband wasn't there. No car, no phone.
Since she left.
Yeah,
about a month ago. And she got this teacher to call me and tell me that she was bad old sick and she knew I'd do something for her and get her a doctor. So, Phil said she beat him to get up, so there's some of the damnedest messes out in the world. So I told this teacher that she could, you know, she lives in Gainesville and Maren rides with her over to Citron to teach. Mm-hmm. And so she stopped dancing and she told her to call me. So I called Dr. Daly over yonder in Williston and he said, well, now I can't come if I come out there. So then I got to get a specimen, bring it back to have it tested and then go back. He says, can't you bring her to me? I says, Jimmy, I says, you know, my head's giving me lots of trouble. And I says, I'm almost scared to drive. He says, well, if they see with her bladder, what was the matter? But it had gone up into her kidneys, and she was just having one hard chill right behind another and bringing that with fever, too. And so I told him, I said, well, I'll meet you at the hospital, you know, when you get there. Says, I'm going out to dinner now, but I'll meet you at the hospital. Yeah, went Phil and I on down there with some pillows and blankets. We loaded up. We carried her on to Williston. And they carried her in the emergency room. Well, Phil and I had stood out there, you know, in the waiting room, and the niggas taking it. Well, you know, he can't tolerate nothing like that. Well, you know me, you know, I kind of pushed one side and, you know, and I was looking for him to explode every minute. So I don't know
what.
He can't take this nigga business running over him, sitting down inside of him, standing all over him.
Oh, he can't.
No, he can't take it.
Well, I'm glad to know that.
No, sorry. Now, he can't take it. And I was just looking for him to blow up Evan Nash.
You just didn't know what to expect.
And Judy wasn't coming. We sat there about 2.5 hours.
Miss Pat.
I couldn't take her up and bring her back. And I couldn't leave her there. So there we had to sit. That to and because he did come and I told him he walked in that door. I said, "You pull off that belt and come here and get across my lap." I said, "I think I can straighten you out."
You know what I told him? I said, "What the hell would you have for supper, Hickory nuts?"
We was in Jacksonville. This old Reed, we love so good. Y'all have. God met Patsy.
Oh, yeah.
He called this morning.
Oh, did she?
That, you know, that's a picture kind of well. That's what Big Mama started and Papa.
How old is she?
She's 24 now, but she called this morning. See how it was. But anyway, when her mama died, Oreen had married a man from
Detroit.
And if you've ever seen a Jimbo's Fool, that's him.
Jimbo's Fool.
Yes, so that's the biggest that it is. And so they called me and Fallon here. Fallon and I went over there. George got drunk as a coot. Now Oreen dead now in the funeral home. And we went over there to be with her little boy and Patsy and George. George got drunk as a coot that night. And Fallon and I went on in our room to go to bed. He got in the bed. He says, "You know, I know we can get ourselves in the damnest messes he's ever been in his life." So when we were sitting in Oviana and Williston, I thought about what he said. We was in another one of them messes.
Phil, I don't know any recipe for getting in the messes.
We brought her around.
I don't know how to get avoid that.
I don't know how to avoid it.
No.
No, I don't
know. We may avoid some, but
you still get in them.
We still get in them.
Next morning,
and,
when he got up, went in the kitchen, opened the refrigerator, got him a can of beer.
But
when he did, I reached up and got it. I put it back in the refrigerator. I said, "This is one damn day you ain't gonna drink no beer or nothing else.
Is that
I said, "You can't drink it and fight me." And I said, "That's just showing hell what you got to do if you try it."
Is that right?
And I said, "You're not gonna have none today." And you did.
Yeah.
He didn't say nothing. He walked on out.
Yeah.
And,
well, maybe
just but I just felt like throwing him. I did. I think anybody in that mess needed somebody to tell him. Yeah. I sure thought so, and I did.
Mabel, I talked to her one time. That was at the Thanksgiving. Ms.
Moss.
Uh-huh. And I was surprised. She talked well.
She's a nice little woman.
And you know she came from a wealthy family.
Yeah.
Ms. Moss.
But I never run into her.
Where did they come from? Bob Bay Area?
Barbados or something.
Bob Bay Area.
Barbados. In South America.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Her mother, I think, has got plenty of money. And she says she went crying to her mama. Mama paid for that place for her, but says she wouldn't do it. And her money down in this country. And if she brings it to the United States, they'll take, if she takes it out of there, either that country takes so much, over here charges so much,
and
so that her mama just goes down there and gets a little of time and eases it back over in the States.
Yeah.
Her mama lives in Miami.
Yeah.
But I was sorry for the poor woman, and her husband didn't come in until Friday night, and that was on Tuesday.
So you
owned that thing,
yeah.
They didn't.
He came in here one Thursday, and their man was so sick, and he said, "Mom says I'm sick, said I don't know where else to go."
And he came to you?
Yeah, he came in the door, and quick as he walked in the door, I could tell something was the matter with him, and he sat down there. And he went to her, and she was in Miami. There wasn't nobody here. He said, "Mom, I am so sick, I don't know what to do." He says, "I can't." He says, "I need you if I ever need you. I need you now."
And you didn't know what he had or anything?
Well, I knew, well, I thought he had the flu. That's what he
did. He didn't give it to you, that's all.
And I got up and gave him two aspirins and directly, I think he sent it to him. It had already been about 30 minutes, and then it was 102.
Mm.
Well, I'd taken him and put him to bed, and I was up within my every hour during the night. Watching his temperature, you know, and all. And the next morning, I called Dr. Henry in Gainesville and had him up there. And he said it was the flu. And he gave him some shots, gave him a shot and some medicine. So I brought him back home and got him all right before I turned him loose. But the fella and I didn't take it.
That's what you get for being able to doctor, Mabel.
Well, a guy, I can't turn nobody down when they're sick. I run from one thing in my life, and I didn't run. Daddy made me do it. It flew back into World War I. He told us we better stay away from Miss Higgins over there, and she lived about from here up yonder. And I'd go and talk to her girl standing outside the fence, you know, and talk to them in the house on the bed, you know, and I got it. It like killed me. And I said, I'd never do that again.
Yeah.
I never run from the mumps or nothing else. If it were necessary for me to go into it, I'd go into it.
Oh, Lord, do I run from it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I just run from it. You know, the trouble I have up there at the office, these youngsters will come up there, and they won't stand out there, you see, where you wouldn't catch it. They come up there and just breathe and say, sometimes I feel like just turning around and stomping them.
Well, guys, you go to the drugstore and ask them for that cold preventative. It's four or five different kinds put up by four or five different, you know, companies.
Mm-hmm.
And tell them that you wanted the kind you take 20 tablets, you know, and it's one, you take 1 30 minutes before breakfast. It costs you about $1.25. And if you take it in September and then another round in February, you won't have no cold.
Oh.
He's got where I used to have to give it to him every year because he'd have it and everybody die with it. And he's got where he didn't even have one last year.
Mm.
And don't know how the heart having a cold is.
Hmm. It should be worth $1.25, wouldn't
it? And it's around $1.25.
It's the cheapest thing that ever happened to me.
Mm.
Of course, I was in them swamps with my feet wet and all like that, and going and maybe eat breakfast and then not eat anything else till 9, 10 o'clock that night and all like that.
Yeah.
When Paul
and,
was in.
Around everybody, you know, and all.
When
and,
Paul was
I kept a cold.
Oh, you did?
Yes, sir. I kept a cold in my room.
Well, it gets built up a resistance against
it,
and it's nothing to hurt you.
That stuff.
Better than no shots.
Oh, yeah.
I
shots.
Think
oh,
I've taken it
$2,
two, 3 years.
And
I never
had
it.
Were you still in the swamp?
And
when she found out about that?
Yeah.
And you take one of them 30 minutes before you eat every morning. And so you take the 20 up. And if you take it in September and then February, and where I learned that at.
Yeah, I was going to ask you.
When Paul was at Bowles School, you know, that's our son, Paul.
Yeah.
That he had asthma. He had asthma terrible, and if he got out anywhere at night, 8, 6 o'clock, he had one of those attacks. So I had to keep him in.
Uh-huh.
Well, me is in this school over here. The nurse over there told me, she says that she had, you know, ordered it. And she says, I'm going to give it to them, every one of them. And Paul quit having asthma.
Hmm.
And whenever he came home, you know, and stayed here, school was out and all, he came home and after, you know, he got out of it and all like that, he started having asthma again. So I asked the doctor about it. He said, well, I'll get it for you. And
he
got it for me. And give it to me, and I give it to Paul for years.
And you've been using that all this time?
Mm-hmm. Been using that all the time. And that nurse that was talking to me, another man, she was like, Paul, which school over there?
A janitor.
The janitor said he stayed there 5 years to do what he did.
And killed
her. And he killed her. And tried to burn her up. He attacked her and she fought him so until he killed her. He didn't intend to kill her, but he killed her and then threw mattress and things on her and threw kerosene on it, and then she didn't burn up.
She wasn't only a good nurse, she was a good doctor. She taken care of them boys over there, and she taken care of them too.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you don't have to have no prescription for that. You can buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely won't hurt you, because if it did, it would hurt him and Paul, and Paul would take you the meantime. And
you know, right, it's too late in the season to start it.
No, February is when you take it in September and then in February. Mm-hmm. So you can get it, take it now. And you won't have to worry about no cold, for you won't take it.
You know what that is, see? What do you call it, maybe?
I don't know what you call it. Just tell them at the drugstore you want some cold for Bendig. And tell them he's got 20 tablets in a bottle.
Mm-hmm. Where do you get it?
I'll get it while it's drugstore.
Wise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it absolutely won't hurt you. Now, it's made by you can get it in the tablet form, you can get it in the capsule.
Mm-hmm.
But we always use a capsule because that was the first we ever got.
Well, now, maybe, well, here's the thing of it. I never have been over here, but what I didn't learn something. Just pick up something. Not only just one thing, but just any number of things.
Now, we're not that smart.
When you come over there where at our place, you don't learn a thing.
You don't know what I do or not.
I don't know what you learned.
But
I know he's got some pretty games over.
They are pretty, and they don't have a thing to eat. I didn't know calves that young would live off that old dead grass.
They get more than you think for a guy.
And I wondered what in the world they would eat. But they are there, I asked him, I said, what in the world are you feeding these cows on? Not anything. And they coming up there and they look like they bust.
There's an awful lot of good pickings around over on that place.
Oh, them.
Yeah, it is. That's a good, nice, good place.
But
gives them
Miss Boyle, Miss Bessie reports on Miss Boyle, you know. Maggie used to work with us. And I've heard her say again and again, Miss Boyle just never fed them cows anything in one time. Take care of themselves.
She didn't. I was talking to Bruce once, and I said, Bruce, what do you going to get to feed them cows on? He says, I think I'll get some of that molasses. And I reckon they had 40, 50 cows. And he bought one barrel of molasses.
Yeah.
One barrel.
Yeah.
And I bought a barrel of it too. And I know I gave the deal for $3, $4, $5, but I don't know. I'm mighty cheap. Big old wooden barrel. And, he bought one barrel too, and he fed that one barrel, and that's all them cows got through the winter, and it was a hard winter too.
Mm-hmm.
And his cows didn't look so bad.
Yeah,
never heard of.
They looked better than mine,
and you fed them all you could.
Fed them, and I'd fill up the trough with hay. Then I'd take that about a half a bucket of that molasses, finish filling it up with water where it'd be thin, and then I just put it all over that hay. They'd eat it every bit, and I was going to that much trouble to feed them, you know. And he just got some and pulled the trough and let them lick it.
But making a crop or anything, you know, if it calls for one stack of fertilizer, they'll put from 2 to 3.
Yeah.
And that's about 2 cows.
Yeah.
And then one cup will give them 2.
Yeah, I know how he eats.
Well, that's another story. I want to talk about Miss Carrie sometime. We talk about her off and on. I just want to sit back and talk about her a little bit.
Where is she at now?
I haven't kept up with her. As far as I know,
she's the most peculiar person I have ever seen.
Yeah.
She's smart.
Very smart.
Yeah.
But she's peculiar.
Well, if she hadn't been peculiar, I wouldn't be over there, you see.
That's right.
She would have sold that place to somebody else. The way it was, she sold it to somebody she didn't know. She didn't know
me. I tell you, she would have sold it to,
Richardson wanted it, but they wanted
her husband.
They wanted her son.
He told me one time, if he ever sold it or had to sell it, that there's one thing about it they would never get.
They may wind up with a dead hell, you don't know. He thinks, don't get up. And we certainly enjoyed the visit. Oh, me. And thank you for the telephone.
Doesn't make any difference how high up people is, middle class, low class, or for people like me. You can cut it off, press that thing, cut it off if you want to.
The other end.
Right the other end, the button, just push it down.
That's a roar in the gear.
If they'll pull together and they want something other and pull together, more than likely, they'll accomplish it. No question about that. But whenever you see two people that can't get along at all, and then the third one, their boy, it hits a pitiful situation, I tell you this.
Well, the boy don't stay there.
He stays there when she stays there.
Oh, I see. Well, now, of course, you saw pretty soon that as a fellow to run a place like this, he's got to know a whole lot.
Yes.
And this boy seems like he hadn't learned much as he had went along.
No, you take your boy. He went in service when he was 16, 17 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And he stayed there for 12 years, I think it was. And then he got out and messed around there a little while and worked for the fire department 16 years. And the man.
Well, now, he could have gone through the service and not learned much. You know, they do that. Mm-hmm. But in the fire department, well, what do they do? Just sit there and wait for a fire call?
They just sit there and wait for a fire, play checkers, play poker, things like that.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
Well, I hate to say it anyhow. He's nice. He liked them dogs, didn't he?
When I was 22 years old, I thought that there was a boy there from my hometown, and he went to Albany and got a job on the fire department. And I thought that was nice. He wore nice uniforms and sat around there and all like that. I thought that was pretty good. And I went to see old man Brosman and told him I wanted to be a fireman. He told me, he said, for the first 6 months, he says, your pay will be mighty little, says, just about enough to pay your board and take care of you and all like that. I told him that was all right, but I went down to the fire department and I sat around there. This I told old man Brosman I didn't think that was for me.
How long did you sit around?
Oh, I sat around there 2-3 hours.
Just one time?
Yeah, just at one time. I lived 20 miles from there, and it was about that time before the train come, train time, so
yeah.
I stayed right there.
Tell me one little sawmill story. I don't know enough about sawmilling, you see. All I know is what I heard you say, talk about. And you haven't talked very much about that somehow or other.
Well,
now, you talked time or two about having this mill over here.
I guess maybe I know more about that than I do anything else, because my daddy was a sawmill man, and I was raised with him. And I guess,
your daddy before you?
Yeah, and I guess maybe I know more about that than I do anything else.
Well, you did
and
more
assignments. Generally, people don't talk about what they know
or
anything
know about.
They talk about something and don't know darn thing about it.
That's right.
So.
Down here, the most of the milling you did was cypress?
Oh, no. I went into cypress business when I came to Waycross. I left Albany and went to Brunswick, and after a big storm that came up in the Waycross section, it blew down a lot of pine timber that belonged to us, and I'd taken a small tractor mill and went down there to salvage that timber. And while I was down there, I walked off in this open oak swamp, and I seen some mighty pretty cypress. So I got the man that actually owned it was too rich to talk to me. He just didn't want to be bothered with $25,000 or $30,000. He didn't care about that, you know.
Yeah.
But I talked to him, and somehow or another, he kind of liked me. And he told me, says, yes, says, you go ahead and cut it. And if you can pay me $3 a thousand feet for it, says, you do it. And says, if you can't, says, you come back to see me. And he said, I don't want to have nothing to do with it. He says, if you owe me anything, says, just put it in the bank at Folkestone. Says, I don't want to have nothing to do with it. And so I wonder, that's the way I went into the cypress business down there. And I,
good luck.
And the thing about it is, it was in 1932.
Oh, you went in that in the bad years.
In the bad time.
Now, did you have you had an outfit, a rig and all?
I had the mill, but I didn't have nothing to start the week in a swamp like that.
No. But you had some men.
I had the
mill,
and I had the men and all like that, but for the logging equipment, I didn't have yet. Actually didn't know very much about that kind of logging. But and the Brunswick Peninsula Company, the company that I was with and had an interest in it, they wouldn't hear to it at all. So I got this fella down here at O'Keller. Busby down there runs a hardware place down there. He built a mill for me, and I built a good mill down there. And I don't guess I'd ever been able to run it if it hadn't been for Hickory Lee Powder Company. They loaned me 3 miles of railroad track.
Oh.
And then
that's a queer thing to loan a fella.
Yeah. They loaned me 3 miles of railroad and a tractor, a Ford tractor with wheels on it to pull it, and I picked up some old cars down there where the people had thrown them away and built me some log cars. I guess if it hadn't been for those people, I couldn't have swung it by myself, but I did. I kept
going. Well, did that get you out of the swamp?
Yeah, that got me into the first lot.
Yeah.
And then I would buy hay for a mile of railroad at the time, or whatever I could pay for, you know. And finally bought the rail that I borrowed from Hercules Powder Company.
Well, was enough dry land to put your track on and get
down in? Oh, no, no, no. You had to crib it or pile drive a track. You drove a pile in every 5 feet.
Yeah.
And put a cross tie on it and put the rail on that every 5 feet. Apart in the swamp. That's the way you built it. But there were some places in there.
Where was she then?
She was in Waycross. There were some places in
You lived in Waycross then?
That there was no bottom to it. You couldn't use piling because maybe you'd drive a piling down there 60 feet and never hit nothing. And
you mean in the mud?
Yeah. There's some places in there, I don't know where the bottom is.
Yeah.
But we had to go cross it. So we take big logs, something like that, and put those every 5 feet, and they would hold it up. You'd have to keep jacking it up and fixing it long as you used it, you know. But you didn't use those spur tracks very long before you picked them up and moved them in another direction. And then we had one old nigger, old Uncle Abe. I thought lots of him. And he was 71 years old. And he could go up a tree 70 or 80 feet and cut the top out of it, throw his hat up and beat it to the ground. Now he could do it. I had a mighty good crew of people down there.
There's Uncle Abe.
Uncle Abe, yeah. So when I got through there, they sold it to the government. And when I got through the five lots that I had in there, they were 490-acre lots. And when I got through with them, of course, I had to move out.
Well, now, this rich man, did he owned all that?
Yeah.
And then he sold it back to the government?
Back to the government, yes.
So the timber didn't cost him anything?
No.
I mean, he didn't have anything to lose?
No, he didn't have nothing to lose.
He was going to turn it back to the government.
And at that time, it was pretty rough. But
I talked to Fred and them over here, and after Mabel, you know that big you haven't talked about it, that big cabbage crop where they all made so much money and bought a new car at 1930, I guess it was. You heard him talk about it. After that, they didn't make any more money for clay on up through the 30s, hardly.
No.
Down here, and they had all those reverses. They had that big flood down here, and then after the flood, everybody got sick with typhoid or malaria.
Back here, I don't remember just when it was, but when I got through up there in 38.
You was there all that time?
I moved in 32 and moved away, got out of that swamp in 38. Yeah. I was in that swamp for 6 years. Well, I had equipment then. I had equipment to get anything anywhere. It didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
And I came down in Florida. There was a track of timber down here on Ocoee River. And I came down here to buy it. A man thought he had an option on it, but he didn't. It was sold to Wilson Cypress Company. And we came back through Mekinope, going on back to Lake City. And he knew Franklin, Benny Franklin. He knew him and stopped there to speak to him or something or like that. And he told me that he had this boundary timber over here in River Sticks. And I asked him how much he had, and he said 2.5 million feet, and told me what he wanted for it. I don't remember now, but I told him that I would come back the next day or the next and look at it. And I came back and brought a fellow that worked for me, fellow Bridges, with me. And we went in there, and we'd have to swim some to look at it.
Oh, really?
I guess about the shallowest water that was in there was 4 foot. And it went on to 8, 9 foot. See, it rules that water when they cut that canal down in there. And that's what made that water get as high as it did in there. Well, it was beautiful timber. And I bought it. And, but really, I don't think, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I understand there were several people tried to get it, but nobody could ever get it. And I cut the biggest tree I ever cut in my life right there.
Is that right? How big a tree was it?
7,281 feet.
That's enough to build a house too.
Yes. And it was a beautiful piece of timber too. So that's how come me in Florida. But if
well, now, how did Benny Franklin get all that property? He got it from his daddy.
No. No, they hadn't. I learned right after I bought it that they hadn't owned it for just a short time. And I paid, I imagine, about as much again as they paid for it. They were timber people, I think, and did run a sawmill and all like that, and they bought it. But I think that they figured that it cost too much to get it that they couldn't get it. And if it hadn't been for me having the equipment to got timber out of that open oak swamp, they were timber people, I think, and did run a sawmill and all like that, and they bought it. But I think that they figured that it cost too much to get it that they couldn't get it. And if it hadn't been for me having the equipment to got timber out of that open oak swamp, I couldn't afford to bought the equipment to get it with if they didn't give it to timber.
Well, now, did you have to put your...
There's some sort of static on this, and I had to cut a part of this little tape taken back on August 6th. But this is the last part of it anyhow. I got the wrong side of the cartridge. Now I'll put on the first part of the cartridge.
Like what I found out.
It's not one place.
I don't know whether it will or not, whether it's going to be any good or not. Part of it's all right. Let me tell you, Sam, over here on these watermelons, they got sued. Well, they were watermelons. You see, the last cutting was so they could get to market on 4th of July.
Uh-huh.
Well, that runs them right on down to the last of June. So, I patched up the fence where they'd been hauling out of there, and I turned the cows in, and I got in touch with old Cecil Pardee to bring his tractor on over there, and he promised me to do that, you know, level off them hills. And I didn't pay attention to it, and a week passed, and I didn't hear from him, you know, and I got in touch with him, and said it's going to be the first week before he got there. I didn't pay any attention to that. So I went back there and sprayed all them old coffee weeds. Oh, they were rank and sick in various parts of it, not solid. Well, let me tell you what happened. He kept putting it off, and then it got to raining pretty bad. Between the heap rows. Except, I got the easy ones, and then the grass got ahead of me, and it was getting so thick I couldn't, my little old tractor wouldn't work. So, Bill Wynn had offered to send somebody down there, you see. Now, this is the old system. This is the old system where we grew up, and you worked in it. I didn't, because I was working with state all the time. You take these fellas, you see, like Cecil, they'll work for old man Christian.
Yeah.
Where they won't work for somebody else. Now, that don't mean that he don't like other people or anything like that. But they'll do it, they'll quit what they're doing, they'll just lay it down and go work for old man Christian. And somebody else, you see, they won't
I don't know why they feel themselves under obligation to them, but they do. You're right about it.
Yes, sir. I keep thinking about, you know, how a fella can get ahead and keep moving. And I just picture myself now making a living, trying to make a living. Well, I couldn't even come close to making a living, Phil. Not having to put up with everything I'd have to put up with.
Well, I'll tell you, if a man thinks that he's going to take a small place like this up here and make a lot of money out of it, he's bad mistaken. It's a good place to have a few cows or pigs or chickens horse, two saddle horse if he wants them or something like that, it's all right. But actually something other to get out there and make a fortune on, you know, it isn't there.
No, not quite big enough these days.
No,
it's the unit's not quite
a
big.
Man might make a living on 400 acres of good stuff and the equipment to take care of it.
But you're going to have to spend money.
Then you got to spend money.
In order to make a little bit.
That's right. Yes, you have.
I wish you heard that, Mabel. I want, it seems to me like in the old days, Phil. Now, I was growing up in the old days. And you see, I never lived in the old days and made a living at that time, you see. All I've ever made a living, I hired out, you see.
Yeah.
Ever since 1930, I have hired out. Now, every now and then, I'd get an honest job, as the fellow said. But by and large, see, I lived on the street. But when I was growing up, we lived in the country, and we had big family and had a lot of neighbors, and I know we never hired any help. And we didn't have all the machinery. But we swapped up like that. We made silage like that. Now, what's your recollection? Didn't you all?
Well, as far as farming is concerned, I didn't know anything about that. My granddaddy was a farmer, And it seemed like to me when I was a small boy that they would have people to come in and help them clear the lands and all like that. And they kind of looked at it as a big day.
Big day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, that was a big day for those people. So they did lots of it, but there wasn't so much of that, not in my family, because my daddy was a sawmill man all the time, a long time before I was born. And so there wasn't so much about that. But I've heard of a lot of that, of people having men. I remember one time knowing an old fella that lived across a little creek over there. They called it Caney Branch. And old man Bud Collier was his name, and his barn, after he got his corn and all and his barn and his barn and all the feed stuff, it caught a fire and burnt up everything the old man had for his feed stuff. And my daddy was on this side of that creek, and I know he quit, knocked off, shut down the mill, and went over there and helped that man build his barn back. I think that was the biggest my daddy done, because lumber was all he had, you know, and help. Mm-hmm. But he had that, and he went and built the man's barn back and all that, and helped with that. And the other people there, remember them saying that they brought enough feed and put in that there crib to last them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, things like that, I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
But actually being any part of it, I never did.
Well, now, Mabel has had so much experience around here, you see, in her farming. And she would know a whole lot about things like that, just, you know, clear on up to recent times. But it looks to me like,
people, it seems like, back in them days, and all, it wasn't only the white people was there. If one of the old nigger farmers had hard luck and all like that, they was always ready to help him, and did. I remember one old nigger, I was very small, his name was old Duncan Jenkins. And the old nigger back in them days was pretty well fixed as far as making a living and all like that. But his house caught a fire and burnt up everything he had. And I remember my mama getting up some quilts and blankets and sheets and things like that and sending it to this old nigger to when his house got burnt up. No, I don't think back then that it made any difference about where a man was black or white. If he needed help, I think they helped him. That's the way that I remember it back then.
Well, what do you think? Do you think insurance and things like that?
Well.
That makes a difference.
I imagine it does. That people in later years, they went to taking insurance on this stuff, you know. And they said, people say, "Oh well, he's got insurance on; he can build it back."
Yeah.
You know, and
that,
I
that
think
that would make a difference all along the line.
Yeah. Yes, it would.
But you know, Phil, now, and you see, I don't know how it is in town, because I don't have any experience with the businesses up there. All I see is out here. But there are so many ways where if you're making a living and you've got to get things done, you can just use a little help every now and then and swap a little labor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember one time that my daddy bought out a mill down there that had been shut down for several years, and he bought it out, and they bought the timber from Dr. Ford, and just labor up there in that country then, you just couldn't get it, and me and my daddy and my brother was all there was to operate that mill. Uh-huh. Well, there was an old colored fella that lived back over there. He'd help us when he could.
There's some more.
And,
cornbread?
No, I don't have no cornbread.
Dr. Ford had a boy working for him. And my daddy told him, says, I'll let Phil help you if you let this boy help us. Well, we done that a time or two, and what I done was pick up trash and burn log heaps and things like that. And one morning, I went up there, and he gave me a mule and a plow and put me out there in that new ground to plying corn. It was up about that high. And plying corn, plying the middle of the corn, I reckon he knowed I didn't have sense enough to plow nothing else. And I'd never plowed none. And I didn't plow 30 minutes, I guess. Old man come out there, and the plow had jumped a notch up there in the top of it some way or another, and I didn't know where it was running right or where it wasn't. I didn't know. But he started about me not plowing right. And I tried to tell him that I didn't know nothing about it, and he come and telling me, he says, got an old wrench, the pipe wrench on one side of it and the monkey wrench on the other, and you screw the thing up. And he kept telling me whenever he fixed a plow for me not to bother it, and I told him the third time that I hadn't bothered it. The fourth time he told me that looked like to him that anybody would have better sense than to move a plow like that. And when he did, I knocked him in the head with that wrench. And that was the end of my plowing, Kevin.
How old were you then?
I was about 12 years old.
12 years old.
And I went on to the house. And I thought I'd better tell my daddy, because him and my daddy was pretty good buddies. They were pretty good buddies. And I thought I'd better go on down there and tell my daddy. So I went on down there and told him. He was at the lot. And, he listened to what I had to say. He didn't say very much about it for a good while. After a while, he turned around and he told me, he says, that same thing happened to me once.
Yeah.
And that's all I ever heard of it. I thought that he was just gonna beat the daylight out of me. That's what I thought.
Maybe I want to turn this on now. I want to ask you what I told Phil Hardy. Side of Cross Creek. Now that equipment cost me. I don't know what you paid for it, a couple thousand dollars and more. And for poor people, two people living right next to each other just can't afford it. And Dodge is, I think he's used it, this would be the second year, third at the most, but I think he bought the equipment. I think he just used it 1 year. He had some old equipment, and he bought this brand new equipment, used it 1 year, and this would be the second.
Well, I can't blame him, my guy, if I had the money to do it with.
Mabel, that's not what he's talking about. It's the equipment is not a whole lot of good to him without some help.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been so much better for them
to work together.
Yeah.
One have the equipment, or both of them have the equipment, and both of them used
work
it.
Together.
Then they would have some help.
But
and this day and time, that's about the way you're going to have to do it.
Yeah.
One's
because
have
you're
to
so capable.
We had a critical time.
Have you been able to get out here and find somebody?
Can't get nobody.
To help you?
Not any good. No. You get George Mitchell's boy.
But, will you have a drink more of that?
Yeah, bring a glass.
Bring
yeah.
Hey, honey, that it's a jar in the back of the refrigerator, as I noticed. Talking about people helping you, the difference in the people now and what they used to be.
Yes.
My daddy one time, years ago, said his crib burned up, and it burned all of his feet up.
Yeah.
And all like that, and he ran an 18-horse farm. Did you know that people came in there and built that crib back, and they hauled corn and fodder, they had fodder then.
Uh-huh.
And fill that crib up enough to take care of his meals and he made his crop.
Yeah.
Didn't cost him a dime.
Yeah.
But now, you should go do something like that for your hand.
You don't do it. Well, now, what I was thinking about, of course, I know Phil's sawmilling, and he'd been out of that for a good long while. Thank you, Phil. But now,
that was hard work and not nerve right.
But now you see, you've done a lot in a small way since Phil did the sawmilling. See, you've farmed all over this country. Now, did you have to own everything yourself? You never could ask anybody for a favor.
Well, now Frank's cut my land for me, and John McCray down there, and everybody's down there at Amos, and all like that. He came in there and fixed those water and ditches for me, whatever it was. John did that.
Uh-huh.
But now I paid him for it.
Yes.
Yeah, I paid him for it. And Frank, I paid him. But still, I bought the tractor and all like that to do, the farmer stuff and all like that. And then
yeah.
I had a previous mule in this country, too.
Yes.
She was all mule. But
yes.
But the stuff gets in your towns where you can't fly it with these tractors
yeah.
like it ought to be.
Yeah.
And I've had a beautiful mule.
Well, now, you see, you all have always had equipment. And you've been able to loan people stuff, but you never have borrowed much.
No, but I tell you the truth about getting help too. But God, I don't say the bragging. I never seen a time feeling I couldn't get help. Because when I was farming, I'd get help when another farmer around here could get it. Louis Graham could get it. But whenever a nigga left that field, I paid him.
Yeah.
That night, he didn't have to come back and get it.
Yeah.
Now, if he was working maybe all the week flying, all right. But the bean pickers, the ones that hold, and things like that, whenever.